Hello, everyone, and welcome into crushthestreet.com. I am Kenneth Amadori. The market seemed to be having a good week this week. The overall equities, Bitcoin is having a good week. It's responding well. Gold is moving higher. Interesting week, to say the least. Are we kind of starting to see that trend line with COVID-19 flatten here a little bit? I know there's a lot of optimism around that, and even though that, you know, as the leaders are expecting, the next couple weeks are supposed to be very, very bad. The ramp up is supposed to be horrible. But we'll see how that ultimately runs out here. I have on the line Chris Coney of Cryptoverse, the Cryptoverse Coney. And his website is cryptoasset.school. We're going to talk about finance, the world as we know it, and of course, cryptocurrency in this world. Chris, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me again, Kenneth. I enjoyed it last time, so glad to be back.
Well, what crazy times we're living in. England, you're in England. Best wishes to Boris Johnson, of course. Really the first major name I've heard of actually getting the virus and then actually going into intensive care. Maybe there's others, but that was the one that seemed to come up for me because of COVID-19. And, my initial thought is, man, if this does really escalate, maybe he dies. Who knows, right? I really think that this could leave an impression on the market because so much of the market is on sentiment and optics from that perspective. Anyways, by way of introduction, you know, what are your current thoughts on the current situation at the moment? How are you doing? You know, kind of let's start off here.
Okay, sure. So the current situation with the old virus, I'm doing okay. I'm quite used to working from home and, you know, being in the house for extended periods of time. So you do notice when there's no option to go out, if you know what I mean, because ordinarily it'd be like, if I choose to stay in, I choose to stay in. If I, you know, get stir crazy, I can go out, but that option's like limited now. In the UK, it's only for essential groceries and then once a day for exercise type of thing. And even when I was in the supermarket the other day, the tannoy, they said, look, you know, just, it's not for browsing. It's for coming in, getting your essentials and getting out. And I was like, okay, that's
very direct,
you know, very direct that is. But yeah, it's been okay so far for me on that level.
So here in the US, we're handing out trillions of dollars to people as a response to this, kind of bridging the gap between, you know, people not working, being able to still pay their rent, pay their mortgage, you know, maybe pay their bills here, and printing, you know, trillions of dollars. The Fed's balance sheet could go to $10 trillion by some estimates, maybe more. I mean, but that's in short term here that people are thinking. You know, are you guys seeing any sort of similar response from your government in terms of that sort of, let's bridge the gap for people that were working and now are home?
Yes. We have had a couple of responses to that. So the Bank of England's current base rate is 0.1%. And the Bank of England's balance sheet, in terms of quantitative easing, it sits at $645 billion right now, which is, what's that? If we just quickly convert that into GBP, sorry, the other way around, it's about $800 billion. So that's comparable, I suppose, given that the size of the UK economy is, you know, a lot smaller than the US. So that's what they've done in terms of quantitative easing. Now, to put that into perspective, they do actually list on the site here the last time they did QE. So this was March 2020, when they added about 200 billion. And the previous time was August 2016, when it stood at 435. So there was a two-year gap there, four-year gap, where they didn't do any QE. So just to reiterate that, August 2016, the Bank of England's balance sheet was about 435 billion in QE. And then 4 years on, as of this March, they've expanded that by about a third. So that probably puts it into perspective a little bit. They've increased it by about a third in the boundary of the United Kingdom's economy. So that's quite a bit in that regard. In terms of assistance, most of it's loans, oddly, which is like, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, that's dumb. Because if you've got to loan businesses money to pay their expenses, that's going to have to be profit they make in the future. And Where do we think they're going to make additional profit in the future to pay for that additional debt? It just made no sense to me. It just pushes the can further down the road, which seems to be the economic paradigm of the last 20 years, doesn't it? Just kick the can down the road.
Now, do you see any truth in the sense that it's better to hold on to an employee than have to close down and restart and kind of go through that whole process of firing and rehiring to get things going back again, sure, as opposed, because this is like, in the argument would be, this is a temporary, everyone's at home for just a short period of time, and then people need to go back to work. So just to bridge that gap while everyone's in quarantine, it's better to keep everybody and then get people back out there. And I'm just playing devil's advocate here. I know that's a nuanced question.
Sure. Well, the UK and the US job markets are very, very different indeed. So I'll answer it in abstract, which is, I was only speaking to a CEO friend of mine this morning who was like just pulling his hair out, hiring. So he just churns through so many employees that are just, you know, they just don't turn out to have the skills they said they did or the character, or they're just not putting the work in or whatever. So he's just constantly retraining people to find a good one that sticks. So if you find a good employee, like Bill Shoup, superstar, those would be the ones you'd want to keep hold of, right? Because they're the ones that's probably going to be snapped up by someone else if they go back onto the jobs market. So it's neither one way or the other, right? If you have to make cuts, you have to make cuts. And you want to keep hold of your key staff, the real superstars, because they're the ones that take so long to find and so hard to replace. In the UK, the government has responded by saying that if you have to put any worker on, they call it furlough, then the government will pay 80% of their salary. And then you basically send them home. So that's interesting. So that's for, if you can't work from home. If you can't work from home, go into work as long as you're not showing the symptoms. And the companies also have the option of furloughing their workers, and the government will pay that worker 80% of their salary, basically just to stay at home. So that's kind of a go-between. I don't know if there's anything like that in the US, but that seems to be the intention behind what you were saying, that you don't have to have these mass layoffs and mass rehirings. You can have everyone on 80% salary, and then being at home, that's temporarily the solution in the UK. Yeah.
Interesting. It seems like there's a lot of people who would have thought that they were recession proof or depression proof, but not really pandemic proof. And, you know, someone going to get their haircut and, you know, you own a barbershop, you're like, oh, you know, people still get their haircuts in the depression, or, you know, I know an ENT who is a doctor, right? You know, and he's down because he mostly treats allergies here in Texas. And people are deferring a lot of things. And, you know, he's just like, my gosh, I'm a doctor. I feel like people are going to still go to the, and he has stuff that will obviously need to be done. But when the government is telling everyone to stay home, this is much different than being prepared for a recession. This is a whole new world of an economic shock to the system. And I guess, what are your thoughts on just how much of an implication this is going to have? And I mean, I know Warren Buffett just sold some of his Delta stock after buying what he thought was maybe a good price in February. Maybe he wasn't anticipating a pandemic. He thought it's, you know, it's a good price and look, it looked good. And, you know, my goodness, you know, a few months later, the world's shutting down. So even him, I'm wondering what are going on in his mind at the moment. Even though he hasn't really given us any specifics on that. But anyways, having said that, what are your thoughts on just the impacts, the long-term impacts on the economy?
Okay, sure. So it boils down to, you know, the economy is like it's like plumbing, and the water circulates in various directions, right? And economic activity is human activity underneath. So if the government comes along and basically pinches the pipe and stops the flow on one end, then of course the water stops circulating, right? And that affects everyone one way or another. So it's all very well saying, well, it's only going to affect the travel industry. Well, it's so inextricably connected that through a domino effect, it eventually gets around the entire plumbing system. Now, that kind of a disruption, like you said, it's not as if a recession is where the flow of water through the plumbing system slows down, but all the pipes are still open. Right? It's just a case of getting a greater market share to sustain your business and so on. But the water's still flowing and the pipes are all still open. If you fundamentally pinch them off, like no travel, no air flights, you know, don't go on the bus, that you're pinching off all these pipes and the water just cannot circulate and it grinds to a halt. And you're like, oh dear. Then the only thing people seem to be buying is, you know, groceries, cleaning products for their house, entertainment. And that just changes the entire nature of the economy. All these luxuries, going out to eat, all those industries basically vanish under these conditions. Now, given how fragile the world economy was anyway, I personally don't think you can have such a shock like this and then just remove the kink in the pipe and everything goes back to normal. I just don't see that happening. There's going to be some fundamental changes psychologically for people in terms of their circumstances, in terms of industry changes. It's not just like temporary disruption. It's already gone on long enough to have some permanent damage, in my opinion.
I want to ask you about Bitcoin here, but before I do, I really want to ask you about gold as well. You know, seeing the economy come to a grind here, gold seemed to provide great liquidity for a lot of the selling that has taken place in the overall equities. And gold has held up. I mean, we saw it hit over $1,700 overnight. It's moved back down some. What are your thoughts on this as a finite asset? Is this something that you're bullish on longer term here?
Short answer is yes. The problem with gold and all assets in the old financial system is the price discovery has gone completely out the window because of the derivatives market, right? Even gold right now, this crisis is good to highlight this break in price discovery between the bullion markets and the paper gold markets. And why is it my bullion dealer, physical dealer, is neither taking orders to buy it and is neither taking trades if I want to sell my physical coins? I went on the site this morning to look at the values, like the we pay this much for your silver coins thingy. And it's like, well, fill this form out, you can get in the queue because for a minute, we're not taking any in. And I was like, oh my goodness me. So, and this has been circulating around the web. Yeah, you look at the silver price on spot and then you go and find a physical silver coin, you'll find a physical silver coin ounce is about $5 more than a paper, you know, a silver ounce. So that's a bit of a problem. I also see that problem beginning to extend to Bitcoin as well. Yes, we say it's a bearer asset and all this lot, and it's immune to all these things. It's not. We've already got paper Bitcoin starting to creep in to the system, which means it's going to inevitably be susceptible to the same paper contract manipulation as gold and everything else. So that's kind of galling me a bit right now about Bitcoin.
Okay. So I wanted to ask you about that. I find it interesting that Bitcoin is moving with the stock market a little bit, you know, to some degree. We saw it crash when we saw the massive sell-off. And this week we saw it move higher with stocks regaining some ground here. So is it tied to the market? Is it just in a sense susceptible as, you know, an easy thing to sell when we are seeing these massive sell-offs and flight to safety, flight to cash? And what does that say for Bitcoin as a store of wealth and a safe haven and some of these things that, you know, people hope it to be?
Sure. Well, I hope it would be a preferable asset in the sense that it's very, very agile, right? And again, flight to safety, what do? You liquidate your most liquid assets first. And while Bitcoin did tank a good 30 or 40% there, that was because of one of its best traits, which is it trades 24/7 and it's very liquid. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, that, isn't it? The fact that it is very liquid and trades 24/7 means it's the preferred asset to sell if in a crisis. But that just highlights the whole of the crypto asset world as being preferable because it has the same traits. If it trades 24/7, it has liquidity. Wouldn't that be better than having, in my opinion, these silly circuit breakers that it's just an interference in the free market? It doesn't allow, again, price discovery. It doesn't allow price discovery. Bitcoin within hours found a new free market spot price. The stock markets hit the floor, circuit breakers for days. And it creates these gaps where the markets can't trade until the next day. And then everyone's getting wound up in their head, preparing their trades. And it all just releases all the energy at once. And then it gets circuit broken again. So I'm like, this is silly. This is why I prefer free markets, because like what Bitcoin demonstrated, you just get it over with. Everybody wants to panic sells, it finds a new price and stabilizes within hours. Now, what the brokers, the regulators, and the governments try and do is prevent you from losing money, but then they're sort of trying to prevent you from taking risks that you are responsible for, which is a whole other conversation.
Chris, let's look at it from this perspective. We're seeing the whole world go down to the basics in terms of essentials. I mean, we have a lot of discussion of non-essential versus essential. And I'd like to ask you, how does that apply to cryptocurrency from your perspective? You know, anything surfacing in the cryptoverse that is exposing weaknesses in cryptocurrency or strengths in cryptocurrencies. And, you know, as the stress test is being applied to this new asset class.
Sure. It's a good question, isn't it? It's a good question. In, say, in an economic boom where you're earning enough money and your other assets are doing well, you don't mind speculating a bit on your cryptos, right? For when they gather mainstream adoption and all the rest of it. Great. But it's like Warren Buffett, when the tide goes out and it comes to the crunch and everyone gets tightened, well, okay, so your food manufacturer is going to be okay, those kinds of things, but taking it to crypto, well, it is like in any economic recession, it highlights who are the most resilient businesses, the ones that are providing the most value, you know, best price, lowest cost, all that kind of stuff. But in crypto, what happens when it gets squeezed? That's going to have the same effect, isn't it? It's going to highlight or ask the question, which of these crypto assets are essential? And is there enough speculative cash left to float the others? So could I name many essential cryptocurrencies that are indispensable to people's everyday lives? Not many, right? Bitcoin is the obvious one. What's that essential for? It's the essential hedge against a systemic risk in the old financial system. If your dollars or even your assets denominated in dollars, who are already way overinflated by printed money anyway, if that's a systemic risk, your only option is to have wealth outside of that system. And that's an essential trait of Bitcoin. But beyond that, Ethereum, is that essential? Yes, it is. It's becoming very essential because, same reason, it's providing a platform to rebuild a resilient financial system that doesn't have necessarily the systemic risks of the old system. And even if it does, you'll be able to see them because they'll be right there on the smart contracts design.
Chris, I don't know how many trillions of dollars have been destroyed in this environment globally. I mean, you know, and so we have all these metrics that says, okay, well, gold should represent this percentage of this value, right? You know, equities are this percentage, Bitcoin is this percentage. But in this massive deflationary environment, all these metrics seem to go out the window, you know, in a way. Like, why should something be worth that if the money is just disappearing and getting destroyed? Now, of course, a lot of money is being printed into thin air to support this. So that's kind of the double-edged sword to that. But is the price projection in your head, for instance, changing as to where Bitcoin might be headed based on just the fact that the whole world is just seeing this massive deflation and there's a revaluation of, you know, what is normal, what a price of something should be?
That's a very good point. Being a student of the Austrian School of Economics, I happen to subscribe to the subjective theory of value. So that means prices will fluctuate based on people's confidence level. So in an economic boom, people will be willing to pay more for something because they've got confidence that they'll be able to earn more money tomorrow. In a deflation, the opposite happens. You'll defer spending or be willing to pay less for the same thing because you don't have the same level of confidence that you're going to be able to earn that money back tomorrow. So it seems like a riskier purchase in a deflation. So where does that leave the cryptos? Well, I have been studying Mike Maloney's work for a long time. And even though Bitcoin was created in response to a financial crisis and bank bailouts, and it provides this hard supply of currency, it's never been tested, has it, in the wild. Not really. There's never been a financial crisis since it was created. So this is like the acid test. Is it really going to do what it was designed to do? And in Mike Maloney's opinion, I happen to agree with this, that when we go through deflation, prices in dollars, at least, are going to decline. And then in response, because the mainstream banking system, central bankers subscribe to Keynesian economics, deflation is the cardinal sin. They do not want that to happen, won't let it happen, will do anything it takes to prevent it from happening, and will then print the currency into oblivion, right? Which will lead to then hyperinflation. So that's the point at where Bitcoin will either succeed or fail, if you like, in what it was designed for. In fact, I am spending my quarantine time getting back to what I did at university, which was programming, because my intention, actually, I've kind of let the cat out of the bag now, there are a lot of these online tools you can go to look at stats and so on with the blockchain industry and so on. But the tool I want to build is where you can visit a site, it'll be called something like realassetprices.com or something. And all it will do, it'll load up and it'll tell you all the major asset prices priced in Bitcoin rather than the dollar. Because I tweeted out a few days ago, we can no longer rely on prices in US dollars because it's completely lost its meaning. What we need is a reserve asset, a ground state, which doesn't change so that we can assess changes in other assets. You can't have things changing like this, otherwise the price just is completely meaningless. If you've got a hard ground state, then this fluctuates, then you can actually price it. So it's going to be like, how much is an ounce of gold today in BTC? How much is the average house price in the US in BTC? How much is a barrel of oil? A share of the Dow, S&P, all these things, world currencies, the franc, you know, the Swiss franc, etc. And the reason that will make sense is because there will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. There's actually more gold than there is on planet Earth. There's already investments in asteroid mining projects. So gold is not scarce in absolute. Whereas it doesn't matter how many planets you conquer, still only 21 million Bitcoin. So to me, that's where it makes sense to use that as the ground state to price everything. And while that might not happen overnight, I want to provide a tool to get people thinking in this way so they can see what something's really worth against a hard asset.
Good word there. All right, Chris, if you would, share some closing thoughts here. And if people want to learn more about you and the work you're doing and obviously stay up to date with this new project you're working on, where they can go and what they can expect to find.
Sure. Well, my closing thoughts are that even if people are, you know, losing their jobs and so on, there is this enormous job to do, which is rebuild the entire financial system and the internet based on blockchain technology. So that's why I'm getting back into programming, learning smart contract coding, etc. There's plenty of work to do in this realm, like more work than you can possibly imagine. So if you're willing to reskill yourself, that would be my advice, because there's plenty of work to do in that realm. So my favorite places to follow me are on Twitter. It's at Chris Coney, INT, or go to the website cryptoasset.school.
Chris, thank you so much for your time here at Crush the Street. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, mate.